I'm Jaco Voigt, the CEO of Catalytic, and this is Unbundled. In this series, I help to demystify technology in the world of business. Join me as we explore how technology can make your business better. In this episode, we are chatting about the impact of cloud on business. We're chatting about how cloud has evolved, the impact of the cloud on business, and take a glimpse into the future. By the end of this episode, you'll have a clearer idea of how to use cloud in your business. I'm joined today by JP Goff, Executive Software, Cloud and Solutions at Mustik. JP, welcome.
Thank you, Jaco. Good to be here.
So we always start the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm a bit of an adrenaline junkie. I love mountain climbing, hiking, motocross, martial arts. What's really been great throughout my career is I started out as an information systems engineer. So that's what I went to go and study.
That doesn't sound like a lot of adrenaline.
No, that's not a lot of adrenaline. So I'll tell you shortly what's going to happen.
How are you compensating?
Yeah, absolutely. I've always thought that I'm going to be a software developer one day. Okay. Went through the whole rigmarole, did C Sharp, and I can't sit still. So I thought I'm not sitting behind a screen for the rest of my life. And I moved on from there. I moved into to an IT distribution company where I learned how to pick stock and worked in the warehouse. I moved from there to do repairs and assemblies of computers, install networks, diagnose and troubleshoot networks. I used to fix these massive CRT monitors as well. And then from there, started moving into commercial and into business, being a product specialist and moving up into enterprise solutions and those sort of things. I've recently also done my postgraduate in business management. So, it's a continuous sort of learning journey. Find a lot of solace in education. We are here today. Excited to be here, and looking forward to the rest of the session.
So before we jump in, so what does your current role entail?
So my current role entails our go-to-market strategy for our cloud and software and solutions business within Mustik. Mustik has traditionally been a very hardware-driven distribution business. We've recently decided to allocate a lot more funding around the investment of the cloud and software and solutions business. It's become an integral part for all businesses at this stage of the race and in the market. So, I'm sort of heading up that division and, big task.
Okay, so let's jump in. I think that was a great intro, and it speaks to everything that we're going to talk about today. So, let's jump in. I find a lot of times in our SME type customers, these buzzwords aren't really that clear for them. Sure. So how would you explain what the cloud is to somebody?
Yeah, so it's really funny. We used to have a sales director when we spoke about the cloud, he used to go and look outside the window and say, well, it looks like a pretty good day for cloud to sell cloud today, right? So if you have to put it in a nutshell, in very layman's terms, the cloud is somebody else's computer, right? So you are renting somebody else's computer, whether that's compute, storage, or other IT services. It's getting delivered to you remotely, and you pay as you go. I mean, you are not laying out any capital to purchase any IT hardware. You are just basically using somebody else's infrastructure and paying as you consume. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's a great basic breakdown of what it is.
Yeah.
How would you say the cloud has evolved or changed over the past 18, 24 months, this pandemic period that we experienced?
Yeah, so I think we've all heard the joke about, the biggest transformation has come from COVID. The biggest digital transformation has come from COVID, right? So the cloud has evolved quite rapidly. It's grown. We've been seeing double-digit growth for the last 3 years, and it's forecasted to continue on this trend.
Okay.
It's the big part of this is really, if we look back at the pandemic, where would we be without Teams, without Zoom, without Google Meet? You know, it was an enabler for business at that stage, right? So we see that new devices are connected every single day to the internet. We have also seen some reports this year that our edge device market has grown by about 30 to 50%.
So edge device being PCs,
being like PCs tablets and smartphones and all of these devices at the edge, right? Things that we connect, where we consume from the cloud, where we create within the cloud, and you know, this ultimately feeds back into the cloud in the back end. It creates more data. It creates a bigger requirement for storage, a bigger requirement for compute. So the cloud is definitely evolving. You know, we can see hyperscalers that are dropping data centers in the ocean now. They're running out of space. They are looking for new ways to really host all of these services and host it closer to the edge, closer to the consumers, right? We're seeing large investments from the hyperscalers in South Africa. There's currently a story, I mean, I'm sure everybody has followed the story with Amazon trying to come into South Africa and the new building that they're trying to put up in the Cape, and it's been met with some fierce opposition at this stage, but there's large investment. I mean, we can see that it's continuously evolving, and the trend is to keep on going in that way.
So we spoke now about how this pandemic sped this up, and I always ask the question, if we think about it logically, if it makes such sense and it's so logical, why did it take a pandemic to jolt us into that?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of hesitancy right around it, and I think what a lot of organizations miss maybe is the planning and deciding in terms of what you want to move to the cloud. It's horses for courses. Not everything can go into the cloud, and you know, you need to think about your current workloads, your current applications, how your users are accessing them. It's not a one size fits all, and this is really the key importance there. The hesitance before the pandemic was really, you know, I could see my equipment is here. I can hug it. I can give it a kiss every morning, give it a cup of coffee if I really have to. I know it's there and I know it's switching on. But if you have to scale quite rapidly without having to install all of this hardware, if it's not already available, the easiest way to do that is through the cloud, right? So the pandemic has really forced that hesitancy and forced us into our discomfort zones. Right?
Was that specifically because of lockdowns that the hardware wasn't available?
Yeah, so and also, like I say, it takes a lot of planning, right? So you can't at a whim decide that this is now all of a sudden the new infrastructure that I require in my environment. Whereas with the cloud, it maybe makes a bit of a difference where you say, well, I now require X amount of storage, X amount of compute right now. I need to switch it on, right? So if it's not readily available, and if it's not readily available within your environment, it makes it really difficult to wait for 4 weeks to get your stock in. I mean, during the pandemic, we saw massive, massive challenges in terms of ETAs, component shortages, not, you know, vendors not being able to manufacture goods, and then the second thing, trying to get it into the country was another thing, right? So
can we talk about that? And I don't know if it's a sensitive topic, but I think those supply challenges still exist today.
They do.
What has brought that about?
So I think there's a bit of an elastic band effect, right? So firstly is during COVID, a lot of the factories had to close down. So much like we had social distancing and we had hard lockdowns, these factories had to close down completely. Now, if you are building machines every single day and you've got QA and you've got all of these things that need to be completed, there are still humans involved. Even though it's a semi-automated or automated process, there are a lot of humans in the chain. At the height of the pandemic, a lot of these factories were closed down for certain periods, or they were halved in terms of their capacity of staff, right? And once this was completed, we also sort of ran into some resource challenges, not enough water, water scarcity in Taiwan, that sort of thing, you know. And it's the semiconductor manufacturing business requires a lot of water. So without that, you know, you're sort of running into a brick wall. So once we could catch up and once we were over all of these hard lockdowns, the factories started opening up slowly. Then we started running into sort of logistical challenges moving stock from one country to another country where different lockdowns were imposed in different countries. So you've got quarantine, you've got sort of for 2 weeks that trucks are waiting with stock and cargo in those villages and in those countries and certain stopover points. So once we once the stock was shipped, congestion in the harbors, right? So now you've got this sort of this massive rush to get stock into the country. Then we heard at some point as well that there was a shortage of containers. Actual containers to ship things in. So, you know, we saw some price increases from $1,000, $2,000 per container to $10,000, $12,000 per container. So we're still seeing some sort of a ripple effect of that backlog that's
an 18, 24-month process to work
out. I mean, we've seen some investments from large multinationals like Intel. They've invested in Arizona, a new semiconductor factory, which will be manufacturing CPUs, but they estimate that they'll only most probably reach like a 70-80% yield out of the manufacturing process around end of 2023. So you know, that still creates a massive backlog.
Because I find that you know, in our daily engagement with customers, people, we know it exists, but it's almost like people still don't accept it. Like, you have to be able to make a plan.
And
I think that the chip shortage, it's affected guys like yourselves, us, car dealerships, literally everybody.
Absolutely, and who takes preference at this point in time, right? So it really is a reality. We also thought at some stage that it's not going to impact us that much, but you know, we saw ETAs move up from sort of like a 3-4 week standard to about 6 months, 7 months, and that's really the impact. So it's sort of what you where customers used to say, this is the specification that I'm looking for. A consumer would say, this is what I'm looking for, this is my ultimate gaming machine or my work machine or whatever. They had to sort of settle for what was available.
But to me, and to me, that comes back to the whole discussion that we have this discussion repeatedly on the show, in terms of how important it is for any size business to plan properly. You know, you have to be able to plan for events where there might be shortages and stuff like that. So I want to go back to something that you said earlier in terms of the cloud is not a one size fits all, or you don't just shift everything into a public cloud necessarily. So I see our new buzzword is this hybrid type cloud. How would you describe that?
So I would say hybrid type cloud is looking at some of your applications or within your stack and seeing which of those need to reside within your premises or locally, and which of these services you run with these big hyperscalers. It really comes down to your policies and your procedures and the type of customers you work with, right? So I'll give you an example maybe of that. So if you are in the media industry, you most probably have a lot of raw data that you're working with, and you need sort of high access and high access throughput to that data. If that's something that's sitting in the cloud and you've got latency, you know, that's probably not the best fit for that business. Where you've got a large workforce, you know, we've seen Poppy change our world completely. GDPR has changed it from 2018, I believe. I think that's when it was implemented. But since the onset of GDPR, we could see that compliance and security was most probably one of the largest areas of concern, right? So how do we comply to this? And the easiest way to do that is through cloud platforms, right? And just to manage it. There are still people involved. There are still processes that need to be followed. But can you monitor it? Can you manage it to a certain extent? Yes, you can. So it's really about deciding which of these workloads you want to move. Do you require, like I say, fast throughput to your databases? Is that a local thing, or is that something that sits in the cloud? When you do your backups, are you choosing a local provider because sovereignty doesn't allow you to move it outside of the borders of South Africa, or you know, and where does your compute sit at the end of the day? So.
And that almost leads me into the into the next question, which was a discussion that you and I recently had. All of those, it's theoretically, if we do it in a nice animated diagram, we can make the cloud look so much easier. But it has actually added a lot of complexities because it's a lot more difficult to know what the right decision is.
Yeah.
So what has been the impact on cloud, of cloud in business?
Yeah, so I think, so we quickly spoke about it's been obviously an enabler for us during the pandemic, right? So that's really important. I think the next thing is that, we now have to be very, very conscious of where our data resides, okay? I think a lot of the data sovereignty has been solved, but at some point, you still would need a localized backup of your data workloads, right? So if you've got a rogue administrator that's all of a sudden switching off your Microsoft accounts, regardless of all the geo-replication and all of these kind of things, you can still lose all of it, right? So you could lose access to your data. So it's very important to have policies in place to ensure that these workloads can be managed properly, firstly. I think the other large impact for us was really the skills retention, right? So... So I think what a lot of people miss is that as soon as you sign up for any cloud service, it's not an abdication of your responsibility to manage your business, right?
That's so important.
It's super important, and I think it's a really topical discussion at this stage. The environments are becoming more complex, as you correctly say. It requires skills to manage that. So even though you might not have the requirements in cloud to actually physically manage your hardware at this point in time, the operation, the management, the compliance still sits squarely, on the shoulders of the CTO or the CIO or the owner of the company, right? So it's really important to understand that these skills are now a requirement, where we always used to have sort of generalist IT manager that could manage all of these things because it was just the network and the phone systems and sort of your Active Directory and your email. It now becomes a compliance officer. It becomes a chief security officer. It becomes, Patch Tuesdays used to be only a one-day thing, but I think a lot of companies would agree that this has now become a weekly exercise. It's not just a Tuesday anymore. So though everything is released on a Tuesday, it could take up to a week, depending on the size of your teams, to actually patch all of your services, patch your devices, make sure that you're up to date, make sure that you're not leaving any security gaps. Having a security professional that sits, monitors the common vulnerability databases every single day, it's become jobs within itself, and it's split out completely due to the complexity of these things, right?
And then the other thing in terms of those skills is in South Africa, there's not a lot around.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say there isn't a lot around, but I think the skills are moving around quite a lot, right?
Okay.
So this global economy, if we think physical borders are quite porous, virtual borders are even more porous, right?
Yes,
so we've got people that can work from home remotely now, right? We see that this hybrid working model is most probably something that's going to continue into the future. We look at rising oil prices due to this Ukraine-Russia conflict, where connectivity might become more valuable than your car, but the point is that skills are, it's now sort of a skills economy, where a IT administrator or a database administrator, Azure portal administrator, AWS administrator now can sit and choose to their liking where they want to work and where physically and virtually where they want to work, right?
So you can live in South Africa but work
in anywhere
America
in the world, and at their salary. Right.
Okay.
So and this is the difference, right? So we are constantly being met with this challenge of retaining staff, okay? And when I say we, I speak as a collective or maybe as an industry. It's very sought after skills. The complexity thereof is forcing specialization for every single one of these people. As soon as you get certified, all of a sudden you get noticed by the large overseas corporates, and it's really difficult. We've invested in a training center most probably about 5 years ago, we've done exceptionally well to bring sort of
like graduates?
Yeah, like graduates through there, and giving them like technical skills around their IT and so forth. And you know, it's sort of like a springboard where they start getting experience, and once they get experience and more certifications, they move on to the next thing, right? So which is great on the one end, but in the other end, you know, if you're a big organization, you most probably need to retain those skills as much as you can to ensure that your policies and processes are running.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I think that this, I don't want to talk about the pandemic the whole time, but I mean, there's also the talk about the great resignation. So everybody wants to make a change in their life and go live in a different town. And, you know, like you say, maybe the easiest thing is probably to change your job if you have skills.
Yes, absolutely.
So, and that just, you know, because always when you have these conversations, I always sit and think about our SME type customers. You know, typically the organization is of such a nature that they don't have dedicated in-house IT resources. You know, they normally make use of a third party. And I always sit and think, you know, how do you, as a my example on the podcast, always I'm Gert, and I have an accounting practice in Centurion.
Yes.
So I do books for people. Yeah. How do I know if somebody comes and says hyperscaler, cloud, this, that, and then you know, if that talent in that company that I entrusted changes, how do I ensure that continuity? Because I might find myself in the cloud, and that might not be the place where I want to be.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult to navigate. So what should a business consider when they look to the cloud?
Yeah, so I think that list grows every single day. I think, you know, we've spoken a little bit about compliance and regulation. I think that's the first thing. The second thing is security. So, you know, I know a lot of the myths have been busted around cloud security, and that it's maybe not as secure. You know, there's continuous work that's been done in the cloud for security. But there is one sort of nuance there, and that's your internal configuration of your hardware. Right, so where you are in charge of your own hardware, you're in charge of your own software and your platforms, it does create some sort of comfort for an IT team when they're diagnosing. You know, there's time differences with all of these cloud vendors, and it's sometimes quite difficult to get up and running again once you start diagnosing a problem or if there is a problem. So you know, that's sort of security. Your availability in terms of where you want to access your data from, your services. The speed at what you need to access. I mean, we spoke about it quickly around a media company. You know, you need to consider these kind of things. Do you need large amounts of storage? Do you need fast storage? Do you need a backup? Do you need and by the way, the answer to do you need a backup is yes. The answer is always yes.
One of the biggest myths for me is people think because they sit in a large hyperscaler, so the likes of Azure or AWS or Google Cloud, they just think, oh well, it's these international companies, surely they're just going to take care of all of it.
Yes.
And we know there's local examples where people sat at large service provider virtualized infrastructure.
Yes.
And it fell over, and the customer didn't have a backup. And now he's saying, yeah, but it's actually not my fault. But
absolutely,
it's like you say, there's a lot of myths around it.
Yeah. And you know what's quite funny is I speak to family, I speak to friends that say, oh, don't worry, I've got my stuff in, I don't know, in Google Drive, or I've got my stuff. You know, that's a sync location. So if you delete on the one end, it deletes on the other end.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Unless you know how to set it up. But the point is, so it's actually a sync location. A backup means that it's somewhere safe. You can't touch it. If I do something here today, I'm not deleting it over there. Right. So it's extremely important to have that in place. And then, you know, the other thing to remember is that there are costs involved. Okay. Moving into the cloud and moving out of the cloud, there are migration costs. It's not a one-day decision. It's not a overnight decision to just quickly switch on into the cloud and then move back out if it doesn't work. A lot of planning needs to take place. And it's really important to understand that as businesses evolve and as compliance and regulations evolve, these pendulum swings are taken into the hyperscalers, back into private, over into hybrid, and back again into the hyperscalers. So it's very important to to understand your business, to understand who the players are in the market and who you can work with that have the skill sets in that space.
And the other thing that I'm sitting thinking while we're having this discussion, I think as from a business owner perspective, we try and abdicate the technical responsibility. Say, yeah, I'm not technical, so I don't understand any of that.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that I never see people ask, so they'll talk about costs and what am I going to gain and what's the benefits.
Yeah.
I've not seen a customer to say, what's the risks? What can go wrong here for me?
Yes.
That can end up making this a bad decision. It's almost like we're just turning a blind eye to it and say, yeah, but you never told me, so it's not my fault.
Yeah. And I think, if you look at regulations like Poppy at this point in time, you can't abdicate that responsibility anymore. There's an immense amount of pressure to the chief in charge. To ensure that staff are aware, to ensure that systems are in place, to ensure that competent people are in place,
and that's really regardless of the size of your business.
Absolutely. Irrespective.
Tell me, JP, we spoke about now the large hyperscalers, but there's also companies in South Africa that have gone and built their own virtualized clouds.
Yeah. Absolutely. And there are quite a few of them, actually. They've seen the gap in the market. And I think, we spoke about it earlier around data sovereignty. We've seen local players in the market that have built their spaces, and it's a very... the incentive is there for businesses to move to local cloud providers. At the end of the day, it's about the service, the consultation, ensuring that you've got a space and you are... when you look at these local providers, many of them also don't really have the risks of load shedding that every other business has, right? So it's a very real thing in our country. We've accepted it. We're learning to live with it. But what's really important to understand that as a small business, when you go down and when you're off, what does it cost you per minute, per hour, per day? Okay. Can you invoice? Can't you invoice when your systems are offline? Okay, and those are the things to really understand, and a lot of these local providers sort of mitigate those risks for the smaller businesses. Yeah.
Okay. And then maybe a bit of a personal opinion from your perspective. So there's lots of changes in this cloud world, some of them that I don't even understand. There's all of this talk about big data and containers and AI and all that type of stuff. What does the near future of the cloud in South Africa look like according to you?
I think larger scale adoption, I think, is one of the things. I think we can't deny the fact that more and more organizations are moving into the cloud, regardless of what that setup is, whether that's private, hybrid, or public. I think more security breaches. It's becoming a massive attack surface. We're seeing a lot of the hyperscalers now in the news for breaches. I think also that there's going to be a massive growth in AI related attacks, right? So, and that's what we're seeing right now is AI can adapt the attack surface and the methodology of the attacks a lot quicker than humans can.
Yeah.
And that's why defensive strategies with AI has been built into a lot of security vendors as well. But going forward, I think more internet will be required, more connectivity will be required. We're entering the age of the internet of everything. That's also a new term that's been thrown around maybe for the last year or so, where every single device is connected to the internet, okay, which creates more attack surfaces. And it generates more data, and that's really important. I watched a documentary not too long ago about where they say when a baby, by the time that they're 1 year old right now, they've generated almost 10 gigs worth of data. Okay.
Wow.
And if I had to think back when I was a year old, I can't remember when I was a year old, but what I can remember from that day is two photos that I have up until the time that I'm about 5 years old. Okay, I've got two photos of myself. I look at my son right now, he's got about 10,000 photos already, and he's not even 4 years old, right? So it's extremely exciting, I think, in the one end. The other side is it's quite scary because we're moving more and more things into the cloud. It's uncertain for a lot of people. But with that comes a lot of innovation, a lot of opportunity and excitement. So I think going forward, we'll just see more growth, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, I think based on all the stats that I've also seen, I think the reality, I don't think the cloud is a dare I say, pie in the sky topic anymore. It's a real thing, and I think that international vendors, not the cloud providers, software providers, all of those type of things will drive how that future progresses, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we can still see the most consumption right now is under software as a service. So those are things like your productivity apps and things like that, you know, infrastructure platform that's growing. It is still growing. It's growing in double digits, but it's not really the size of the software as a service industry at this stage. Okay. So yeah, we're looking forward to the next few years.
Okay, fantastic. I wish we had more time, but I think we're definitely going to have a follow-up one of these days.
Thank you, Jaco.
Thank you,
Great
Jaco.
To be here.
I appreciate it. Thanks for listening to Unbundled, brought to you by Catalytic, a series that aims to demystify technology so that you can make smarter decisions for your business. Remember, you can listen to all of the episodes on the Cliff Central app or website. And for added convenience, you can subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you listen. And if you're looking for help with your communications tools in your business, please make sure to visit catalytic.co.za. Cliffcentral.com